Erev Tov. Erev Tov. We learned already the first Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva. We said that there are four Mishnayos said by Rabbi Akiva. The first Mishnah was the Mishnah that said, Schok v'kalut rosh, margilin le'erva, masoret is siyag le'torah, ma'asrot siyag le'osher, nedarim siyag le'perishut, siyag le'chachma, shtika. Hu haya omer, Rabbi Akiva used to say, Chaviv Adam Shenivra Bitzela. Now the fact is, we could spend a great deal of time on a few of the words that he uses here. Beloved is man, Shenivra Bitzelen, who was created in the image. Chaviv Adam, man is beloved, Shenivra Bitzelen. The Mishnah goes on to say, Chiva Yaseda no doubt lo Shenivra Bitzelem. There is an added love by virtue of the fact that no doubt lo, God made it known to him that he was created in the image of God. Now it's not enough that he was created, but God wanted to make sure that he knows that he was created in the image of God. Shenema, as it says, Bitzelem Elohim Asat Adam. God tells Noach that man was created in the image of God. What does it mean? What does B'Tselem Elokim mean? What does it all mean? The fact is that we could say a whole shiur just on the word Nivra, created. I mean, what is created? What does created mean? All right, but that we don't have to worry about. There was a time at which people were concerned about the about evolution. Was there creation, or did the human beings evolve from lower forms of being? I don't think that we have to trouble ourselves with that anymore, first of all, because while the scientific world may still talk in terms of evolution, there's never been any proof for evolution. And even if there would be proof for evolution, Rav Kook already said it, and many others said it, that the story of creation that we have in Torah is not a scientific description of what took place. The story of creation is a story that has behind it the morality upon which a world is built. And you're going to see soon what I mean. There's absolutely nothing that really says that we have to believe that there were 6 days of 24 hours each during which creation took place. Those 6 days could have been millions of years. The fact is that man was created fully grown. He wasn't one day old on the day that he was created. And if on that day you would have dug into the ground for coal, you would have found coal. Aye, coal is a fossil that takes billions of years to make. But the world was created complete, full. We don't know how the Rebbeinu Shem brought it into being. That doesn't make any difference to us. The important thing is the idea of B'Tselem. What does it mean that man is created B'Tselem Elohim? So we're going to take an approach. We're going to take an approach where we're going to go through what is the uniqueness of man, wherein man is radically, intrinsically, inherently different than the animal kingdom. Yes, there is that about man that is so unique and so unusual and so exceptional that it speaks of the fact that he's created B'Tselem Elokim. man is not merely physical, but he was endowed by his Creator with a neshama. Call it whatever you want. Call it personality. Call it chelik elokam imal, something that comes from the divine above. So you have to understand that in the first Mishnah already, the first Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva, he had already described to us an aspect of Tzelem Elokim. Tzelem Elokim, in the way I'm going to explain it, is whatever we see in man that is God-like, similar to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, that's the form and image of God. It doesn't mean that man looks like God, is shaped like God, or formed like God, but his personality and his neshama is endowed with the sanctity of Rabbeinu Shel Olam. What do I mean when I say that the first Mishnah, the Mishnah of Siyagim, Siyag L'Chochma Shtika, Ma'asrot Siyag L'Osha, the whole Mishnah was talking about fences. You remember at the end of last week's Shir, I told you the Rashi in Shir Ashirim, Suga Tashoshanim, that Torah creates within man a hedge of roses, a hedge of roses. What's meant by a hedge of roses? Here, yes, Chosin and Kala, it's after the wedding, she tells him that she saw Tipas Dam. And he separates and she separates. What is it that divides between the two? There's a relationship, and the human being is capable of building that invisible fence. There's the Dvar Hashem that says, no, you can't do it. Or the man that Rashi brings, the Medrash, the man who's walking on the road and he sees a beautiful tree, he stretches out his hand in order to take a fruit, and there's a voice that tells him, no, it's not yours. And he restrains himself. He withholds. The Chachme HaKabbalah say, the world came into being by virtue of the fact that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam withdrew, that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam restrained himself, that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam made a siyag. This is what's called Sod HaTzimtzum, contraction. Because the fact is that Malei Kol Haaretz Kavodo, the whole world is full of the glory of God. The Zohar says, let Atar Panu Milei, there is no place on the face of this earth where God is not. The Rabbeinu Shem is called Makom, the place, because he is the totality of the place. In order to make room for a whole universe, God had to practice what is called Tzimtzum. You don't have to understand what it means, but it means contraction. Let me explain to you where the word Tzimtzum comes from. It comes from a very, very powerful Medrash. The Medrash says the following. When the Rabbeinu Shem said to Moshe, "V'asuli migdash v'shachanti v'sochem, they shall make unto me a mishkan, a migdash, and I will dwell in their midst." Nivhal Moshe. Moshe began to tremble. V'nirta la'achorav, and he was taken aback. V'omar, and he said to the Rabbeinu Shem, "Hinei hashamayim u'shmei hashamayim lo yichal kalucha. The heavens and the heavens above the heavens are not able to contain you." What do you mean I'm going to make a little house over here and this is going to be your dwelling place? Batol, merely you tell me, V'osul imigdosh v'shachanti b'tocham. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response to Moshe was, Moshe, lo kishim sha'atosavur, it's not the way you think. Ela esrim kedesh b'tzafon, 20 krushim to the north, 20 krushim to the south, 8 krushim to the west. Vaniyode, then I come down from the heavens, umitzamtzeim shchinati lamata, and I contract my shchina, my divine presence, below. Pa'amim, God tells him there are times that hashamayim u'shmei hashamayim lo yichal kaluni, the heavens, and the heavens above the heavens cannot contain me. Pa'amim, and there are times, aniyode, I come down, umitzamtzeim et shchinati ama alama, and there it is. I can contract myself within a space of 1 cubit by 1 cubit. As it says, V'no'adeti l'cho sham, the Rebbe Shem says, I will appear to you there, V'dibarti et chom yala kapodet, that I will speak to you from upon the kapodet, mipen shnei ha'kruvim, between the two kruvim, asher aladon ha'idot. That's the... There the Medrash establishes the principle of tzimtzum. In order to create the world, the Rebbe Yishom had to give it something himself. The Rebbe Yishom expects of man precisely the way in which he acts with the world. This is what he expects of man. He doesn't expect of man anything that he does not require of himself. The Rebbe Yishom practices tzimtzum. Right? He doesn't take over everything. He's able to withdraw, able to control, able to remain within the boundaries of Esrim Kedesh B'Tzafon, Esrim Kedesh B'Darom, and Eight Krashim L'Marav. He's able to do that. That's what he expects of man. How does Tzimtzum express itself in man? Halacha, Torah, Mitzvahs. I don't want to say Kriyishma now, but I have to say Kriyishma, and I do it. I have to fast, I have to eat matzah, I have to eat matzah. I don't have the freedom to do whatever I want to do. I have requirements, I have responsibilities. I have to control, I have to contract, I have to make walls around me in order that I should be able to fulfill Torah mitzvahs. That's precisely what the Rebbe Yishom does. Now, that means the first mission of Rabbi Akiva also describes the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu conducts himself in this world, and that's exactly what he expects of us. Now I'm going to take a few giant steps forward. I tell you, here's I pulled out of my library a sefer that I learned for the first time 50 years ago. How do you like that? 50 years ago. And I found exactly what I was looking for. It's a sefer called Doreinu Mul She'elot HaNetzach, Our Generation Facing the Problems of Eternity, the Eternal Problems of the Jewish People, by Aaron Barth. He was something in a bank. He wasn't Stanley Fisher. No, wasn't no, the bank. No, he was a bank manager. About a kluge yider, very very good thinker. He just describes in part, he describes B'Tselem. What's B'Tselem? There's a great deal I have to add to it, and there's a tremendous amount of structure over here that's very important. So, number one, he says that in the nature of man, it is in the nature of mankind that mankind strives for unity and for union, Achdus. Haven't succeeded too well. But there were attempts. A League of Nations, a United Nations, NATO, CETO. There have always been attempts at people being united. Because mankind sees itself all as part of one group. I mean, ultimately the Navi says, V'hoy Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz. Ultimately, the end of history is that there's going to be an entire mankind, a world united under the kingship of God. That's ultimately what it's going to be. That's what it's going to be. But within the human psyche, there's something in the human psyche that looks for union, the resolution of differences, breaking down barriers between people. The whole idea of how we deal with problems. We have a thesis, we have the antithesis, until ultimately we arrive at a synthesis. We have one statement, and then we have another statement that seems to contradict it. And what do we search for? We search for the solution that is going to bring the two statements and make them one, so that there is no contradiction. There's a constant movement toward union. And the world has had a trying times doing it, but ultimately that's going to be the goal. Where does man get this desire?
In the dark of night, he would love to see a world that is completely united. Of course he would love to see it. Every man would love to see it. Where does he get this from? He gets this because he has a Tzelem Elokim. What is the Rebbeinu Shem? The Rebbeinu Shem is Echad, Hashem Echad, Ushmo Echad. God is absolute unity. And what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, that he has endowed man with it. So therefore this idea of oneness and unity is something that's basic to mankind. You'll begin to get the picture as we go further. There's somebody who once said, the moment that the early man made the calculation that two shepselach plus two shepselach equals four shepselach, and whenever there are going to be two shepselach and two shepselach, you know what a shepsel is? Good. It will always add up to four. The moment that man was able to arrive at that conclusion, you know what he was doing? He was already becoming divine-like. Because at that point, he is beginning to think in abstract form. He doesn't have four shepselach in front of him. But the mind is able. The human mind is unbelievable. The abstract ideas that are totally not physical at all, they're all ideas. All these ideas are created in the mind of man. The only one in nature who can think in abstract terms is only the human being, no other being. Because just as God, what do we believe about God? Not only he's one, he's also not physical. So there's therefore a major aspect of the human being that is not physical. He can transcend the physical. He can move out of the limitations of the time and place in which he finds himself, and his mind is able to hold universes in it. Because that's that's by virtue of the fact that he is Tzelem Elokim. Abstract thought is something that only man is capable of. No one else is capable of that. No other being on the face of this earth. Something very fascinating. There is no objective definition of beauty. What do they say? Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. To one person, that's shame. To somebody else, it's not shame. But there's one thing that's common to all of mankind. What's common to all of mankind is, all of mankind, they can be people from any part of the world, they are overwhelmed with the appreciation of the beauty of nature in its pristine form. Nature that hasn't been destroyed by man. I tell you, I think I once told you, it must have been about 10 years ago we finally became Israelis. I think it was about 10 years ago that we went to the Grand Canyon. Understand? 50 years we lived in America and didn't go to the Grand Canyon. But you come to Israel, and then you find out that every Israeli, you should, but Grand Canyon, Bramu. You weren't at the fjords yet, the Rocky Mountains, they were all over. So we decided we're becoming Israelis, and we are going to the Grand Canyon. It was Taka Grand, it's just no question about it. One of the events, we saw signs that at a certain time, around sunset time, there's a ridge, everybody is invited to stand over there. We come to the ridge, and we see people are lining up and lining up, and they are there to see the sunset. And I'm looking at my wife. My wife is looking at me, and we're trying to figure out. It's definitely very beautiful. There's no question about it. We appreciate it like everybody else. But what was the point of making sure that everybody's there? So we decided, half of the people come from Brooklyn. They never saw a sunset in their lives. You understand? The other half may be from Chicago, or no, I should say.
Somebody from Har Nov, my wife and I said, what do you think? We see this every day and every night. Just look out of our window. It's unbelievable. Have you watched the sunsets here? You watch a sunrise? It's unbelievable. These poor city slickers that came over there to the Grand Canyon maybe didn't see a real moving sunset in their lives, or not too terribly often. But there's one thing that all mankind agrees. Pristine nature, as God made it, moves everybody. There's nobody going to say, that's not a nice sunset. That mountain range is, please, Picasso is better. Of course not. Why is it that all mankind is able to appreciate that aspect of beauty? Because there's a divine neshama. There's a divine neshama in the human being. That divine neshama is the tzel and the kim that creates within him the possibility and the ability to be able to appreciate that beauty. Next. Most probably all, or certainly most of mankind, will agree on the definition of good and evil. And strange as it may seem, even the evil will agree to the same definition. For example, what if you would ask most people in the world, what should our attitude be toward the underprivileged, the hungry, people who have suffered from a natural catastrophe? There's been a tsunami. There's been an earthquake. What should we do about some big bully that has attacked and overrun his neighbor? What's the instinctive reaction in the world? Of course, you have to come to the aid of the assistance. What are you talking about? The world didn't send aid to the tsunami victims, to Katrina, to Rita, to Darfur, to Biafra, Hveis. Of course. You will, of course, have the Nazis, Yimach Shemayim. So you can take a number of approaches. One approach is that a human being is capable of destroying the Tzel Malachim that's within him. He's able to destroy the image of God. We're going to come, of course, I'm already leading up to the fact that the most outstanding dimension of man's Tzel Malachim is free will. That's, of course, what's going to be the great, what I call the great one-line Mishnah, the next Mishnah, where Rabbi Akiva says, Hakol Tzafui, everything is seen by God. V'harashut netuna, man has free will. Man, the only creature that has free will. He can choose to do good or do evil. Free choice is all the result of the fact that man is created b'tzelem elokim. The world has a common definition for what is good. Where do they get it from? They get it by virtue of the fact that we are all created with Tzelem Elokim. And I said even the evil can fall into this category, because strangely enough, even the evil find it necessary to attempt to justify what they're doing. For example, the Nazis, Yimach Shemayim v'Zichrom, said the Jews are vermin. You know what you do with vermin? You exterminate vermin. Why did they say that? Why did they have to create that? Because they know that what they're doing is evil. But if you can justify it, you can rationalize it, you can find reason, you can create an atmosphere in which they are the worst danger, the greatest danger to the world. If we don't destroy them, we're going to be destroyed. They're going to take over the whole world. I mean, we hear it. What Ahmadinejad, what did he say today? My, what they had him saying today, they had another speech of his about Jews have to be destroyed. They're going to take over the whole world. They're the great threat.
The fact that the evil have to say this means that they know that what they're doing is evil. So what do? You justify it.
Man has a conscience. Man very often has a guilty conscience. Conscience is only the result of the fact that there's a Tzelem Elokim in a human being. Animals don't have conscience. Animals don't have conscience. Speaking of animals, and we talked about the tsunami, remember a shiur that Rav Soloveitchik gave long time ago, where he described the difference between two terms. Jewish people in Torah are referred to as machaneh. There was machaneh Yisroel, the camp of Israel in the desert. They're also called the Eidah, the congregation. There's a third word, but that was not the topic of the Rav Shir. The Rav was giving a shir on Parshas Balosra. Parshas Balosra, it says that the Rosh told Moshe that he should get trumpets, and he should make trumpets, and the trumpets should be in order that the machaneh, the camp, should move, and to call together the leaders of the Eidah, of the community. She says the difference between machaneh and Eidah is the following. A machaneh is always unified by a threat from without. A machaneh is a camp. Can you imagine? We get the covered wagons all in a circle, and we are now a camp that is protecting itself from a threat from without. A common enemy. A common enemy is that which unites. What happens when the common enemy no longer exists? Then we go back to what we always were. We might be at each other's necks. During the Second World War, America and Russia, you understand, became allies against Hitler Germany. You had it over there. Rashi said it in last week's Seder. But Ammon and Moab always despised one another. What are they doing here together? Midian and Moab are there together. Bolak Melech Moab and Ziknei Midian, they always hated each other. So Rashi says, but when it was a question of standing up against the threat that was now presenting itself in the form of the Jewish people, so against the common enemy, the Jewish people, there they unite. So the Rav said, a machaneh is a camp that is united because of a threat from without. An Eidah, a congregation. Eidah comes from the word aid, to bear testimony. An Eidah, a congregation, bears testimony to some kind of an ideal or an idea that unites them. They are united by something from within. The Eidah of Klal Yisrael, we bear testimony to the fact that we receive Torah from the Rebbeim at Mount Sinai. That already an Eidah is united not by something from without, but something from within. Something from within is something that always lasts. It's not going to disappear. It's only the threat from without that is the cement that keeps a machaneh together. Only that may disappear, and then the machaneh will simply fall apart, and the whole alliance that once was will no longer be. I don't know whatever happened to the alliance that Bush won. Number one, the great coalition of nations against Iraq. The coalition. There is no coalition anymore. It's interesting. Rav then described it, and I thought about it during the tsunami. The Rav describes that in the animal kingdom, when there is a threat. And very often animals instinctively will be able to sense that there's a threat. They can sense the tsunami. There were descriptions in the paper of thousands, tens of thousands of animals of all kinds and all sorts fleeing,
fleeing down the mountainsides. And when they flee, what's interesting is when they flee, the lion and the lamb together, the wolf and the shepherd, when they're fleeing from a threat, they're not going after each other. They're all united by the threat from without, and therefore instinctively they flee. The Rav said, Machane can exist in the animal kingdom. Eidah cannot exist in the animal kingdom. Eidah is the idea that we stand for something, we mean something, we believe in something. The idea of Eidah is a function of Tzelem Elokim. So the man is eminently capable of giving his life for a fellow human being. Human beings have been known throughout all of history, yes, to sacrifice their lives. That altruistic feeling does not exist in any other being on the face of this earth. It's only by the human being. It's a far, far better place you go than you have ever gone. It's a far, far better thing that I do than I have ever done. Cindy Cotton. Or who knows how many people have given their lives to save others. Altruism is something that does not appear at all in the animal kingdom. It only appears in the human beings. And that is because the Tzelem Elokim means, just like the Rebbeinu Shlom is Zon Umefarnes, he takes care of a whole world, man has this feeling, a sense of responsibility for fellow human beings. And he gets this all because his neshama is taken from the divine. There are another few aspects, very, very fascinating. And this is another one that another shiur that Rav spoke at great length about it. A human being has a need, a desire, sometimes an obsession, to create, to build, to make, to fashion, to form. Doesn't exist by any other creature on the face of this earth. Gemara says, Hadon din emes lamito, a person who judges, a truthful judgment, becomes shutof l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'maisa b'cheshes, becomes a partner of God in creation. The Rav in Ashir once said, we have to be like God. V'halachta b'drachav, you're supposed to go in His ways. So, of course, the Gemara says, Mahu Rachum, just as He is merciful, you should be merciful. Just as He is Chanun, you are kind, He is kind. Just like the Rebbeinu Shlom feeds the hungry, you do it. He clothes the naked, you. He visits the sick, He buries the dead. All of these are aspects of God's divine personality that we have taken on because we are created in His image. Rav said, Mahu Yotzer, just like God is creator, so too man has this feeling within him that he wants to create, he wants to do something. Every human being, whatever way it is, does something. Whatever job one is at, whatever work one does, this is all part of doing something. He has to do something. An animal doesn't have to do anything except take care of itself. Except take care of itself. And yes, we may see streaks of great genius in birds, you know. Birds, for example, know how to make their way without the sophisticated navigational system from one part of the world to the other part of the world. The only thing is, a bird is a master engineer in building a nest. But you know what? 5,000 years later, they're building the same nest with the same materials. Nothing has changed. Birds haven't begun to make high-rise nests. They haven't begun to make ranch nests. You understand? Bidiyuk. Exactly what they were. That's exactly what they are today. The elephant will never learn how to make that that nest. The bird, a lot of things the bird won't learn from anybody else. Everything is limited. They are given an instinct by which to live, but it goes no more than that. There is a deep, profound, and strong instinct in the human being for eternity. We want to leave something over. Children, grandchildren, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Somebody may be able to do a little better than that, even though I think children and grandchildren, if they're mentioned in Gita Yidden, that's a pretty good good thing to leave over. Everybody wants to be remembered by somebody into eternity. Where does it come from? You know where it comes from? Because we have a divine neshama. Mahu, just as God is eternal, so man has a desire and a longing and a yearning to be eternal. Something else. An animal lives in only one time frame, only the present. There's no memory, and there's no anticipating the future. The human being lives in three time frames. We have all of this memory stored up in here, and we can bring it back at any moment. All that memory, a lot of memory. I don't know how many gigabytes there are in here, but we have a lot of memory in here. We also have a sense and ability to anticipate what the result of our actions will be. A human being is capable of being a zoeh es hanolad, one who sees what's going to be. What it really means is that the human being lives indeed in three time frames, in past, present, and future. Who else lives in three time frames? Then Rabbein Yisraelim is hoya, hoveh v'yihyeh. Because man is created b'tzelem Elokim, which is a piece of God, so therefore we have that ability and that power and that longing and that yearning that we live in three time frames. We want to be remembered into eternity. We want to be creative and accomplish things in life. We do have an appreciation of the beauty of nature. We do have an understanding of what is good and what is evil. We do have a conscience. If we don't do the right thing, we are troubled by it. A human being is capable of abstract thought and the idea that a human being has free will. Free will. This is the crowning achievement, most probably, of being created b'tzelem Elokim. When Rabbi Akiva says, Choviv Adam, beloved is man, Shenivra B'Tselem, so you have to understand that he's talking about every human being. This is not at all limited to Jews alone. Choviv Adam, Shenivra B'Tselem, man. All men are created equal. All men were endowed with this greatness. And Chivo Yisrael on the Dazzle. You know, it's amazing what I think of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva lived in times when he was surrounded by people who were so evil and suffered from them until the terrible moment of his death. But he remained the eternal optimist. Who is the one of Chachmei Yisrael who lived in the anticipatory future? Who was the one that was able to see at the time of Churban? He was able to see Zakenim and Zakenos, the elderly, in the streets of Yerushalayim, and children playing in the streets. Who was able to do that? That was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, when he says, Chavav Adam Shenivra B'Tselem, he's preparing us for what ultimately is going to be an understanding of the great power and strength of man. And of course, that's going to lead to the idea that with all of this that man has been endowed, beginning from Siyagin,
the ability of tzimtzum, that man is able to exercise self-control. He's able to think abstractly. He lives in three different time frames. All of these create the great human being, but there is the idea that once he has free will and he is commanded, then ultimately he's going to be judged. Ubetov ha'olam nidon, that next mission is going to say the world is judged well. God judges with mercy and with compassion. Then of course there's going to be the fourth mission of Rabbi Akiva about the store that's open and man can borrow, but he has to know that he's ultimately going to be held responsible for whatever it is that he does. But in its totality, Rabbi Akiva is mamish the great, he's the great optimist. He's very well aware of all of the pitfalls of life. He's aware of all of the evil that lurks out there, the evil from which he and the Jewish people suffered, and suffered at that time, just as at every other time in history, more than any other people. It's unbelievable. And despite that, he saw that the human being is endowed with such greatness and with such sanctity and with such holiness and with such awesome and great ability. We will continue in Yetz Hashem next week.
Zako Baruch.
Thank you. I said this morning, we Jews are a great people. That we're able to read a chapter in Pirkei Avos every Shabbos, understand? I can stay over here on one or two Mishnayos for weeks on end. It's unbelievable what Pirkei Avos is. And we spent the whole Shia now on one word, Betzelem. Chavavad Mishnevur Betzelem. But I'll try and move a little bit.